This is the operator. This is a reminder. Today's call is being recorded. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Sir, you may begin.
Okay, thank you. Glenn has graciously joined us. Technically, today is a day off in Europe. So thank you for being with us today, Glenn.
Philip Corwin joined.
Yeah.
Glenn, would now that we're recording, would you like to take the role?
Yes, certainly I'll do that for you, Greg. On the call we have Greg Aaron, who is the leader of the group, Roland Perry, Barry Cobb, George Kirikos, Mikey O'Connor, Rod Rasmussen, Philip Corwin, Mike Rodenbach, and for staff we have Margie Milam, Jeff Bickers, myself, Glenda Sangeri. And I just see that James Bladel has just joined us as well. And we've got Richard Tindall. He is on the Adobe Connect. And have I left off anybody?
Yeah, hey, this is Richard.
Ah, okay. That's all. Thanks. Great.
Okay. So, on the call, but not yet on it. Please try to connect to Adobe. We'll have a document up there that we'll be discussing today. And as usual, we can use Adobe to help manage the speaking queue. So first, a bit of, and then we have, by the way, regrets from Guangha Lee and Jeremy Hitchcock.
And Greg Ulgerich has just joined us.
Hello, Greg.
Hello.
Okay. First, a bit of housekeeping. The statements of interest have been due. And Glenn, do we have any further statements that we need to collect?
Yes, we've still got a few outstanding. I received the one from Barry Cobb. And I'll send a list out during the call of the statements still outstanding.
Okay. That would be wonderful. Thank you. What I'd like to do is post the ones that have been submitted so far. If you could arrange for them to be posted up to the wiki, that would be great.
Okay.
And let's have a goal of getting the rest of them submitted this week. So I'll put an action item up for that. Okay. Now, our main work for today is to go through the document that Marika had compiled for us. And it's up on Adobe Connect. And the first part is the definition of abuse. Various versions that have been tossed around within this group are up there, and they're lettered A through J. And then Marika has added one, which is letter K, and that was a definition that was put together by the Who Is Issues GNSO drafting team. So evidently that one has gone through some process in that group, and that's what that group came up with. It's actually, I think, a very interesting definition. What I'd like to raise, actually, is I'd like to go through that definition since it's new to us, and then talk about maybe its merits or deficiencies when we match it up against the other definitions that we've posted. So,
Greg, this is Mikey.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm just queued up to get into Adobe. Others may be as well.
Hey, Greg, it's Mike Rodenbaugh.
Hi, Mike.
Can you possibly just move? I'm on a laptop, and K is cut on my screen. I see A through J. Can you just move it up a little bit? Perfect. Thanks.
Okay, I think we've okayed everybody to get into Adobe now. Can you see everything okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. All right, let me read K, just sentence new. It says, misuse is an action causes actual harm, is the predicate to such harm, is illegal or illegitimate, is considered contrary to intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose if such purpose is disclosed. James, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, and just very quickly, I don't mean to split hairs, but do we want to take a look at the difference between misuse, the definition of misuse versus the definition of abuse, or are we treating those as equivalent? That's fine. I just wanted to clarify because I think their definition is for misuse.
Well, that's a good question. Let's start at the beginning of the definition then. The question is, could misuse or abuse be equivalent with abuse, or can they be substituted? Up to us. If you want to, Ed, let's try that on.
I mean, are you saying that we should consider whether misuse and abuse should have different definitions?
No, I'm just saying maybe this is an interesting definition. So I want to work through it, through the wording, and see how it matches up with all these other things that we have. One of the things I'm thinking is if there is some continuity between what we're doing and what other groups are doing that might be useful, then I'd like to raise a few things in this definition which might be useful for us. So that's one question. Can we substitute abuse for misuse? So it goes on to say it's an action that causes actual harm. I guess the word actual is in there indicates that it's something real. Predicate to such harm. My understanding of the word predicate is that it is a way in which something is carried out or as a logical precursor or something like that. And this group gave an example of that. And applied to who is data, the predicate to harmful action includes automated email harvesting, which enables spamming, or domain name registration by proxy / privacy services to aid wrongful activity. So now, somebody could use a proxy or privacy service in order to aid a wrongful activity of some sort. Also, misleading registrant data can be used to aid or abet some sort of a misuse. So I think that's what they're trying to get at when they say predicate. The definition goes on to say is illegal or illegitimate. Is otherwise considered contrary to intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose if such purpose is disclosed. Okay, we have Faisal Shah joining.
Yep.
Richard, you've raised your hand.
Illegitimate name.
Questions?
Abusive.
I think the last part where they say considered contrary to intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose has some applicability to what we're thinking about. For example, we had a recent PDP about on the ad grace period. And the ad grace period was designed originally to let a registrar recover from certain kinds of problems. For example, if a registrant used a fraudulent credit card, the registrar could delete the name within 5 days and get the money back. Or, you know, a registrar could have some sort of registration mistake and they accidentally registered name, didn't mean to. So I think they included this contrary to intentions section to cover things like that. The ad grace period had a certain purpose to it, which was legitimate. In that PDP, it was determined that domain tasting was a use of the AGP that was not intended. Actually ended up, they determined had some harm associated with it. So I think that's why that was in the sentence. Does that help? So anyway, that's their definition. I think it takes in a lot of the things we have in our list, A through J. So I'd like to open it up for discussion. Richard?
Yes. Yeah, just on that point of illegitimate, so what you just said makes sense to me, but the word otherwise in that sentence seems to me to indicate that the word illegitimate in this sentence means something else, but I don't know what that other thing is.
Okay.
So, Richard, you're saying that you could define illegitimate basically as considered contrary to intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose.
Yeah, that makes sense to me, but if that's what illegitimate means and that's all it means, I think that's good, but I think this sentence is implying it means something more than that.
Well, let's say one of the words is illegal, so that it would be a contrary to an established law. Illegitimate might be something which is harmful but not necessarily against the law.
This is Mikey.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'm just wondering if that's not covered in the rest of the in the rest of the definition. What if we dropped illegitimate out of it? Would we lose anything?
Well, what if it was an activity that is not otherwise addressed in another policy? So, in that case, if it wasn't illegal and wasn't addressed in another policy, it would not or could not be considered abusive. In other words, I think illegitimate may be there to not allow big loopholes.
Oh, this is Mikey again. Doesn't that get addressed by the harm and the predicate to harm part? Nice airplane.
Oh, thank you. George has raised his hand.
I was just curious whether the operator between all these sentence fragments is or, because if it's misuse is an action that causes actual harm, or is the predicate to such harm, or is illegal or illegitimate, or is otherwise considered contrary, then you can get some kind of weird permutations where it's an action that causes no harm, isn't the predicate to such harm, isn't illegal, isn't legitimate, but it's somehow considered contrary to the intention. So you have something that somebody devises a novel loophole, but it's not causing any harm, or isn't the predicate of any harm.
Well,
but it's considered abuse.
I think the first sentence, first part of the sentence, establishes that any abuse does cause harm. There's no or associated with causing actual harm. Seems to apply to everything.
So there should be an or between the first two segments and then and after that? And is illegal or illegitimate or is otherwise considered contrary. So the first two segments seem to be like an or situation, actual harm or predicate to harm. And then and is illegal or illegitimate. I'm still not sure.
Okay. Anybody else?
This is Mikey.
Go ahead.
I think George raises a really good point, that this sentence is so long and suffers from this kind of logical parsing problem. It might be good to either break it up into a few sentences or somehow rework it to make it clear.
It's, Mike Roden, I don't know that I agree with that. I think it's pretty clear, although it's a bit circular as we've been discussing it. I think I like your suggestion a little bit ago, Mike, of deleting the words "or illegitimate," and then I think this sentence actually reads quite well.
Okay, so Mike R, would you suggest any changes to the language?
I'd say take out the words "or illegitimate," since that's been defined in the next clause anyway. And it's duplicative and confusing with it in there, I think. But if you take it out, it seems to me it makes fine. I'd also eliminate the last comma, so it's not necessary. And then you've got it, so we read, misuse is an action that causes harm, is the predicate to such harm, is illegal, or is otherwise considered contrary to the intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose if such purpose is disclosed. I don't feel like that's too long and unwieldy. It seems to be a good definition in my mind.
Okay, so you would remove the words or and illegitimate.
Yeah, and the last comma.
And do we keep otherwise?
Well, I think so, because sort of the catch-all. Obviously, if something's illegal, then it is contrary to the intention and design of anything that has been done.
I see George's hand.
Another approach is to maybe, as we were saying, break it up into subsections. Like, for example, misuse is an action that, and then starting you thing A or number one, causes actual harm, and then you can put an or an and after that. Or is the predicate, or two is the predicate to such harm. You know, or and three is illegal or illegitimate or removing illegitimate. And then you could kind of break it up more logically. Like if you look at a lot of, you know, legislation is written, or even how the UDRP is written, they break it up into those subsections. So it's a lot easier to do a test, for example, whether it passes, you know, one, two, or three.
Okay. I see Richard.
Yeah, so I think that the definition we're starting to get now is a good one, I think. But I think what's missing is the extent of harm. So the way it reads at the moment, as I read it, even if there was minor harm, if there was some action, it wouldn't have to be illegal, but it could be being used in a way that wasn't its disclosed intent. Even if there was very minor harm, the current definition labels that abuse, and I don't think that's what we intend here. So I think we need to have something that looks at the magnitude of harm or the balance of harm versus benefit, which, you know, a number of people talked about last time.
My question is, can we do that in the definition, or does that weighing of benefits and acts take place during the discussion of a particular harm or particular proposed abuse? Guest, is that...
That's Roland. Can I just throw in here, when you talk about illegal, under which country's law are you talking illegal?
Well, I'm wondering then if the definition, of course, it varies greatly, and sometimes it's easy to get consensus on something like that, and sometimes not. I guess there's the question of, if you have a general definition, then when you start talking about a particular case, one must decide whether you know, you've got consensus on that area of it being illegal or not, or do you have to rely on the rest of the definition to decide whether it's illegitimate or contrary to intention? Mike Rodenbaugh, here's a question for you. If we can't decide whether something is illegal or not, or we have these jurisdictional issues, does the term illegitimate then give us something to work with or fall back upon?
I think it does. I still think it's a very good question Roland poses. Something we have to consider and further define, I think, or try to.
Mike O'Connor?
I like the way this is going, but I do want to sort of take us back to George's notion of parsing this a bit and then tightening up the logic of it, because I think that a lot of the action that will flow out of this means that this has to be crystal clear, and I think that's a good way to get to that.
Okay. All right, so maybe I see a couple of other people's hands raised, but then maybe we can work on shoring this up or breaking it out. James, see your hand up?
Yes, just going back to something Richard said about quantifying harm, I think we want to be careful not to catch up any sort of innovation where the harm might come to incumbent entities in the form of competition. So any sort of disruptive technology or disruptive use of a system, we certainly wouldn't say that it was harming those industries that it was seeking to compete with.
Okay, so harm doesn't...
We'd have to make sure that we've not casting such a broad net so that harm incorporates just a competitive advantage or disadvantage.
Okay. And I suppose in these situations, you can't please all the people all the time. Somewhere out there on the internet, there may be somebody who's not happy with anything. Going also back to Richard's point, which is at some point during the work, you have to examine the harm, understand how much there is, who's being harmed, and there's some sort of balancing once you get into the details to understand exactly what you're talking about. Okay, and so James, certainly your point that harm is not necessarily equal to competition or however you want to phrase it. Richard?
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate what James said. Yeah, when Google innovated and came up with the best search technology, they really harmed their competitors. So that's not the standard we're applying here.
Okay.
That's in my mind.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Okay, Mike O'Connor had suggested we go through the definition, this definition again, and try to parse some things out. And we have this question of what do the ORs mean? So maybe we should start at the beginning of the definition.
Your line is in talk mode. To return to silent mode, press star 6.
Okay. So let's begin. Misuse is an action that causes actual harm or abuse. Should we substitute abuse for misuse?
I think for now we can.
Okay. So let's try that. Abuse is an action that causes actual harm.
This is Mikey.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'd start with misuse is an action that colon or semicolon or something. And then start doing, this is really George's idea, not mine. I'm hoping that George will pick up here. He's better at this than me. But I think that the notion that George put forward is a good one, where we basically let the first clause be without any content.
Okay. So it could be abuse is an action that, colon, and then below that a bullet, causes actual harm. So anything that is abuse must cause actual harm. Is that the idea?
Well, I think it's what ends that. So if it says abuse is an action that, colon, causes actual harm, comma, or... Yeah, or is the predicate. Way to go, George. You jump in here. I'll step out of this. You're better at this.
Well, it definitely has to be or as a predicate, because you could have the case for the corn flicker situation where you've got 30,000 domain names in a virus, but it's not actually going to cause actual harm unless some subsequent action is pursued. They need the or part for that. And some of these are going to be ands. So it's actually more tricky.
Okay, so how would you suggest it read, George?
Misuse is an action that, one, causes actual harm or is the predicate of such harm, comma. I think that part is easy. But then...
Okay, so...
The next part is going to be whether it's an or an and.
Okay, so the abuse is an action that, colon, one, causes actual harm or is the predicate to such harm. And then two, is illegal or illegitimate?
That just is illegal, and then we would define under whose country's laws. And then three, is otherwise considered contrary to blah, blah, blah.
Now the question is, between one, two, and three, do you have an or an and?
You definitely have an or.
Well, you can have an or between is it illegal, right?
Well, something could be illegal but not causing harm in that case.
Cool. Well, not sure if I agree with that.
Well, we could say that domain spinning is illegal in Canada, say. But it doesn't cause any harm.
But it's not illegal in Canada.
Well,
if something's illegal, then the legislature has made a determination that that activity causes harm. Otherwise, they wouldn't pass a law.
Well, we don't know that, do we?
Make it free speech. Talking about the Thai emperor or whatever, the Thai royal family. Illegal. Does it cause actual harm? Well, they might argue it does, but...
Richard?
Yeah, can we use a different word than predicate? Because I don't really know what it means, and I think most people won't.
It is an interesting concept. I'll go back to the who is definition. Just for illustrative purposes. They said, in the case of who is data, the predicate to harmful action includes automated mail harvesting, domain registration by proxy, support of who is, false who is data, etc. So, are we talking about the way in which you carry out an abuse, or is it a prerequisite for abuse? Talking about a means, or are we talking about an action that's required for the abuse to take place?
We've said that the abuse and action causes harm. So what's the predicate phrase adding to that?
Well, let's see if we can come up with an example. In order to spam, you need a list of email addresses. And in the Whois example, they said, well, harvesting the Whois for email addresses is a way you carry out spamming.
Okay, I'm getting it now.
Right.
It's more.
And so that might raise questions of, you know, you need to have some terms of service on the Whois to prevent people from harvesting it.
So we're saying that in this sense, I think I get it now. So predicate really means enable. So it may not be the direct cause, but it might enable some other action that causes harm?
Might be. Again, we'd have to go back to the dictionary to understand predicate, but maybe predicate isn't the word we want.
Yeah, I've just gone to the dictionary. I don't think predicate is the word we're looking for. I think it's prerequisite is what was intended here. Something that's required beforehand. So a visa is a prerequisite for travel in many countries is the example they give. Isn't that what we mean? Predicate is something totally different, really. If you look at dictionary definition, it says it's that which is affirmed or denied concerning the subject of a proposition. Doesn't seem to be what we're talking about.
And Webster's will say that, and also that predicate is a term designating a property or relation, which I'm still trying to wrap my head around.
Yeah, just I don't know where they came up with that word, but I don't think it's the word they were intending to use.
In any event, most people aren't going to understand that word, so we do need to change it. I think we have to decide what the concept is before we pick the word.
I agree with you completely. Isn't it prerequisite that we mean? Which is a requirement or a precondition?
How's that different from the first part of the sentence?
How is it different from the first part of the sentence? So, an action that causes harm, causes actual harm, or is the prerequisite to such harm?
Hey, Mike, maybe it might be precursor. Maybe it's a precursor, not necessarily a prerequisite.
Well, the thing about that, Faisal, is I think it just leaves it really too wide open. I mean, precursor just means anything that came ahead. It doesn't have to be any sort of causal relation.
Right, something that precedes something that's about to happen, right? But not doesn't necessarily mean it's a requirement.
Yeah, but that could just literally be anything.
Yeah, that's true.
Are we trying to get at the enablement? Something that you do in order to carry out?
Yep.
That's what I think we're trying to get to.
Okay, the concept of enablement. So prerequisite would maybe be a little closer to that, because prerequisite means something you need before something happens.
Right.
Precursor is more general. It means anything that happens before.
Yep.
But not causal relationship.
Yep. I think even enabler is probably a little too broad, too, although I would be comfortable with it.
Is the enabler of such harm? That sounds good.
Okay.
I'd be okay with the enabler as well.
All right, so instead of predicate, we could use prerequisite or enabler. We'll probably need to spend a little bit of time working through the implications of those two words, but they're interesting words, absolutely. All right. So far we have a definition that reads as follows. Abuse is an action that, one, causes actual harm, comma, or is the predicate slash enabler slash prerequisite to such harm? Okay, so...
Can we stop there for just a second?
Okay.
Sorry, I had my hand up from before, but I'll take it now and take it down. Because I agree with Richard's earlier concern that there ought to be some standard for the amount of harm. So I would suggest actual and substantial harm, just to take away any sort of de minimis argument.
Okay, so your proposal would be...
actual and substantial harm.
Okay. So you're trying to say non-trivial or...
Exactly.
...be demonstrated or...
Just something of substance that's non-trivial, that's all. And I think we need to go back, as James raised a good point earlier, too, about harm to whom.
Okay. That's an interesting question. In our earlier variations, we tried to enumerate harm to whom. And some of the definitions included registrants and internet users. One said to any third party. One said to the internet community. One said upon another party. So I have a question. Do we need to, in this definition, say who specifically?
No, I don't think we do. I think potentially it's harm to anyone.
I'm wondering if, when we get into discussions of a specific abuse, then we would explore who specifically is harmed. It could certainly be somebody, it could include parties other than registrants and internet users, certainly. It could include registrars or registries, for example. Should we just leave the issue of who out of the general definition?
This is Mikey.
Mike?
I like that idea because, you know, there are all sorts of people that could be harmed that aren't included in all of the list above. For example, if somebody crashed the electrical grid, they wouldn't be an internet user, they wouldn't be anything, and yet they'd be substantially harmed. So I like the idea. Pretty broad.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else on that idea?
George, I think we have to circle around at some point and bring it back to domain names. Otherwise, we have scope issues that are way too enormous for this working group.
Isn't it assumed that we're talking about domain name issues?
Hopefully there's like a paragraph above this and says, you know, domain name registration, domain name, name server stuff, IP addresses, et cetera, that limit the scope of the use of the word abuse.
Yeah, stuff. Well, anything within ICANN's purview, I guess.
Yeah, that's an ICANN will do mission creep.
That is
ruling the internet.
Yeah, exactly what that is another question. But we'll get to that. anybody else on? One thing maybe we could say is that there may be some, we could develop some commentary that goes along with the definition. And maybe one thing we could do is say, as we do our work, that the party harmed, party or parties harmed, should certainly be identified in the discussion of specific abuses. How does that sound?
Mm. Get that.
Okay. Let me write that down. Okay. All right. Now our definition reads, abuse is an action that, colon, one, causes actual harm, or is the predicate or enabler or prerequisite to be determined to such harm? Comma.
This is Mikey. I liked Rodenbaugh's language, the substantial harm. That kind of dropped out of that version.
Okay.
So this is Rick. I do too.
Causes actual and substantial harm. Okay. Would it be fair then to say in the notes that the substance of the harm should also be examined in relation to the specific abuse?
This is Mikey. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. All right. So, abuse is an action that, colon, causes, one, causes actual and substantial harm, comma, or is the predicate enabler prerequisite to such harm, comma. Then, two, is illegal or illegitimate, comma, or is otherwise considered contrary to intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose if such purpose is disclosed.
I think you might want a three in front of that last little.
Right.
Well, I guess number one is about harm. Causes harm or enables the harm. And then two, why is it abusive? Or what's the other criteria?
So these are new ones instead of two. They'd be like A and B. And is it?
Well, it currently reads, is illegal or illegitimate, or is otherwise considered contrary to intention and design of a stated legitimate purpose, if such purpose is disclosed. Now, maybe one way to work through this is to look at some examples. We had that AGP policy recently. The AGP policy, domain tasting wasn't illegal. Some people thought it was illegitimate, and some people probably thought it was legitimate. So that one was, might have been kind of a matter of opinion.
I would also be careful there, because there were certainly arguments made that certain practices about domain tasting were illegal.
Well, right. It depended on how you did it. If you were tasting trademark names, that was different than tasting names that had been dropped but still had residual traffic, for example.
Fair.
Right. But domain tasting was considered contrary to intention and design of the AGP. Therefore, it was considered an abuse because it met that criteria. Phishing would be something that I think most folks could agree is illegal, because theft and fraud are pretty much illegal everywhere. Would everybody agree with that in principle?
Yes.
Unless you're in Somalia.
What are some other examples of things that would be maybe illegitimate but not illegal or contrary to a stated legitimate purpose? Can you think of any?
Well, domain front running is probably one example. It's not illegal. Whether it's legitimate or not is considered a matter of opinion. It isn't contrary to intention and design of a legitimate purpose, because it's just normal registration that happens because people are faster on the ball or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Also,
it causes actual harm, but it but only to one person, it's more of a competitive harm than a true harm. Well, that's hard to.
That's a good example. Another one is mining the Whois database for marketing purposes.
Well, in the contracts, is there anything that prohibits you from mining the Whois?
Terms of service generally do of each registrar.
And of at least some registries I know of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that would be contrary to stated purpose.
And contrary to intention. The intention was simply to provide a contact for really for technical reasons, and administrative and billing reasons, I guess, that's true. But, yeah, none of those reasons apply to mining the whole database for marketing purposes.
Okay.
Things like archiving the Whois, like domain tools in their registrant search to be able to find out all the domains owned by a certain party. That's probably an example of this. Even though that has a legitimate purpose, too, if people want to do research. But it was not the initial design of what Whois was for.
Right. So
it was always possible, but it was never kind of...
What you're referring to is a service that basically collates and collects a lot of domain name information to allow one to look up the history of domains or relationships between names and registrants or domain names and name servers, that kind of thing.
Right.
It's not illegal.
And I would question, this is James, I would question whether that would be even illegitimate.
Mm-hmm.
I think that now we're starting to tread into an area that's somewhat innovative. I mean, they're not doing that within the Whois system. They're in that particular example, they've built their own infrastructure to facilitate those services. So,
but some people might say it's considered contrary to the intention and design if they say that the intention was to have a current contact info. Other people might argue it becomes illegitimate when you start saving all the past contact details to do correlation analysis or whatever.
Mm.
Or it might violate privacy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the legitimate becomes a big question mark. Mike brought that up properly.
Yeah.
Mike wrote about, given the number of mics we have.
That'd be the kind of thing where there would be a debate about whether it was illegitimate or not.
Right. I don't know that we need to use that one as an example because I think there is a big debate about whether that's illegitimate, but I think there's no debate that mining the Whois database for marketing purposes is illegitimate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So we've got a definition. And we have a couple of unanswered questions about it. One is this issue, should we replace the word predicate with something else? Since it's about 20 after, what I would propose is that I post the definition as it currently stands up to the list, and that we have a vigorous conversation about it on the list over the next week. And since we're on the list, that allows us to see a version in written form in front of us, and then we can trade comments on it. I'd like to leave a few minutes in the meeting to talk about some other things, if that's okay. George, I see your hand.
Oh, I was going to say, it might be possible to add a few more columns to that list of abuses, and then we could go and see whether our definition matches it once the appropriate columns are there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Richard, I see your hand.
Using the K definition.
Yeah, I think we're making good progress on the definition, and I think there's still probably a little ways to go. But part of my mind is saying that at some point pretty soon we should start to get into some actual examples and debate what we think is or isn't abuse. And I think in the context of those examples, we're going to get some good feedback back to the definition.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in our document, we do have a kind of a laundry list at this point. And one of the things we could do on the list is create examples. I'll put up the list again, and we could play around with the idea of matching up those with our definitions. In some ways, this will be a way for us to vet our definition, see how it works. It's also a way to question assumptions. Does that make sense? I don't want to put too much structure on it. I'd say that we should just take it to the list and trade some notes. One of the things I wanted to mention is that since we're meeting every other week, we actually don't have that many meetings until Sydney. We actually only have 5 meetings after today, and then we'll have a meeting in Sydney. So we do need to do, in our off time, we need to be, I think, productive on the list. There is also the question of a meeting at Sydney. Everyone had agreed, yes, we should definitely do that. There is now the question from the staff about scheduling that. And the staff is starting to block out time for the Sydney meeting. And I believe Glenn has asked, do we want to have that meeting during GNSO days, working days, which are the first Saturday and Sunday of the meeting? So that would be either Saturday, June 20th, or Sunday, June 21st. We'll have a conference facility no matter what. So if you're not going to be in Sydney, we'll still have a meeting and have a conference line open so you can participate. But does anybody have a preference? Should we have it on that Saturday or Sunday, or should we have it during the week? Some other time. I'd like to open that up.
This is Richard. My personal preference would be not on the Saturday, Sunday.
Mike Rodenbaugh, I agree with that. I think it would be better if we could have more of an open meeting that people could come in and observe.
Well, it could be on the Saturday or Sunday, but it could be open. I mean, I assume our meetings are open anyway.
Yeah, it's just that nobody's really there on Saturday and Sunday, or not nearly as many people are there Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, this is true. I myself don't know exactly when I'm going to be coming in yet. Probably not on that Saturday, though. Does anybody else, of the folks on the call, how many of you are planning on going to Sydney? Can you raise your hand if you'll be there? I'm sorry. Can you use the check mark if you'll be there? And myself, Faisal, James, Margie, Mike, Richard, Mike Rodenbaugh, Richard, Rod. For sure. Roland doesn't know yet. Only not Barry, George, Greg O, or Mike O'Connor. The other thing to keep in mind is Sydney is on the other side of the world for most of us. If we're going to have a call, then we have to have it at a time when that's either going to be earlier in the morning or later in the day in order to let people from Europe and the United States join. And that's where most of our members are. So it doesn't sound like there's any enthusiasm for Saturday or Sunday. What I can do is let me post back on the list to Glenn. And Glenn, The schedules for Monday, I imagine, are fairly unsettled as far as all the other kinds of meetings that could happen.
Yes, they are, but that's why I sent that note out, Greg, was that if we were thinking of, for example, something like a workshop during the week that we should get our request in right now, which I think we could do.
Okay.
Say for Monday, but it's going to be very difficult to schedule a meeting in Australia that is going to suit the rest of the continents. Because as somebody has said, the best time would be 7 a.m. in Australia. But there is a placeholder on the draft schedule for Monday morning for a breakfast meeting. Would that mean anything to any of you?
So that would be Monday, 7 a.m. local time?
That's right, yes. Like we had it in Mexico City, because that placeholder is still on the schedule.
As we speak right now, it's 1:30 a.m. in Sydney. So if everybody adds like 6 hours, that's 7:30 their time. 6 hours from my local time is pretty good. But I don't
it's a 7 a.m. meeting and just doesn't... I would want a meeting on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, because nobody's going to come to a 7 a.m. meeting except the hardcore members of this group.
Even if it's 9 a.m. or 10 a.m., it's reasonable for those in Eastern time. It becomes like the early evening.
Okay. Tuesday is Constituency Day.
That's right.
Some of us certainly will be booked into meetings starting probably at 8 or 9 that day.
Then on Wednesday morning, we've got the council meeting from 8 until 12:30.
Margie, do you know is of anything interesting that's going on Monday that might conflict during say 9-ish on Monday?
Yes, the 9-ish, sorry, did I butt in again? But it is the opening ceremony. And we've all been asked not to put anything conflicting with the opening ceremony. Then I see that there is a new GTLD session just after that and a fast track session just after that on Monday. Those are provisional.
Okay. So on Monday it really does look like early morning is the only viable time.
Yes, as I said, there's still that there's a placeholder in there from the last conference schedule, which we've just kept in, but it is early.
Okay.
So Phil Corwin just sent an email to Liz saying he's going to make it to the ICANN meeting in Sydney. He couldn't get on to Adobe Connect.
Thank you. 7 a.m. sounds bad, but for those of us in Europe and from the Europe or the United States, our clocks are going to be off anyway. Is it really that bad?
What if we said 7:30? Because I remember why we said 7 for this meeting the last time was because it conflicted with something to do with the registrars and the registries. Who were having, I'll tell you, oh, I know what it conflicted with the last time, with a CSAC open meeting, which was at 8 o'clock. So what about compromising and, say, having it from 7:30 to 9, 1.5 hours?
Okay, and again, 7:30 at Sydney time is equivalent to 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, United States. So those of you from the United States, it would be early evening. Those of you in Europe, it would be approximately another 5 hours, 10 p.m. roughly, 10 or 11 p.m. The alternative is to have a meeting on Sunday. So, so right now we have 7:30 to 9 on Monday. That's the proposal. Is it horrible, or can everyone live with it?
I'm okay. This is Richard. I'm okay with it.
Okay. Do we have any strong objections to Monday 7:30 to 9? Hearing none. I propose that I send a note back to Glenn saying that we should reserve that time for Sydney, Monday 7:30 to 9 a.m. And that will allow us to get a meeting room guaranteed. If no objections, let's go ahead and do that so we're guaranteed some space. And at least that way, those of us who are straggling in over the weekend will be able to participate. We'll be off the planes and at the conference facility. Okay, cool.
About 50 to 100 people, Greg?
Good question. I have no idea. will we be presenting this as a working group meeting or as a workshop? The proposal was for a meeting of the working group. Now, that could be open for anyone to observe. Now, I think the question of a workshop maybe is a little separate. Because at this point, the working group is still doing its work. It doesn't have a work product, perhaps, present at that point. We don't know if we will or not. There's also the question of whether or not there are any other activities taking place at Sydney which might have a bearing on our work or some relationship. Margie, do you know if there will be any sessions during the week on e-crime?
We're likely to have e-crime sessions. We're still trying to fit them in the schedule. I don't think it would be that early on Monday, so I don't think there would be a conflict there. And then also with respect to the new TLDs, there'll probably be sessions that talk about the four overarching issues. You know, one of them is trademark abuse. The other one is that's relevant to our group is the malicious abuse. So yeah, there will be some issues that are probably very interesting to this group.
Okay, so that's good to know. So we won't overlap with those meetings, which members may want to attend. Also, if this group needs to give an update about its work in those kinds of meetings where there's overlap, then we could do it. Okay. All right, so let's present this as a working group meeting. Are there any objections to having it be an open meeting where ICANN attendees can observe? Hearing none, no objection. Let's do that. It would allow perhaps members of the community to come in, and then maybe during the course of the meeting we could have questions and answers, and it would give members of the community an opportunity to have some transparency into our work. So does that sound okay? All right. Let's do that then. Glenn, I'll send a note back to you, confirming.
Thank you, Greg.
Okay. We've gone a little bit over time, but we have some takeaways. We'll continue some work on the definition. I think we made some really good progress today. And I encourage everybody to participate in that discussion. I think we're getting close to some good wording we can use. Part of the work over the next 2 weeks on the list will also be to play with matching this proposed definition up with some of the examples that we have on our list. And then I imagine that in future meetings we'll try to nail down our definition and then start working our way through specific proposed abuses and get into some nitty-gritty there. So I think that's it. We're a few minutes over time. I think it was well worth it. Does anybody have any parting thoughts? Okay. If not, thanks everybody for joining today, and look forward to talking with you more on the list.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, everyone.